Holy all cow. Right. There we go. There we go. My goodness. Hey, everybody, I'm Kyle Risdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. Making today make sense is what we do.
And I am Kimberly Adams.
All
thank
days,
you.
Most days. Most days. All days. All days. Sorry, we do it all days, except weekends.
Okay. I'm Kimberly Adams. Sorry. Thank you for joining us on this What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, since clearly we want to know on what days we make everyone be smart. And I guess today, hopefully, that's today.
Sorry.
All right, so it's What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, where we answer your questions from the past week. If you have a question that you think we should answer, you can leave us a voicemail at 508-827-6278, or you can send us an email, makemesmart@marketplace.org.
All right, let's go. Who's driving today? Drew Jostad, let's hit it.
Hi, my name's Sam from Ventura, California, and I was wondering if you can make me smart on gas prices and why it seems they're so volatile and quick to respond to price changes in the price of crude oil. Aren't those gallons of fuel at the corner bought months ahead at those prices? And why are they so quick to change? Thanks for making me smart.
Good question. You want that one or you want me to take that one?
Sure, I'll do that one. I guess it really depends on who you ask. I mean, I know lots of people just want to say, oh, it's oil company greed, but gas prices are pretty volatile for a lot of different factors. You have what we've been talking about, disruptions to crude oil supplies, refinery operations, even like gas deliveries can cause the prices to change. And sometimes even with the season, because you may have heard about a switch to like a summer blend of gas in warmer months.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of when gas stations buy it, right, most gas stations, or at least many gas stations, only have like 2 or 3 days worth of gas on hand. So the price reflects what it would cost them or what they think it's going to cost them to replenish their tanks. And, you know, it takes a while for the oil that, you know, is traded on the market to get to a refinery, mm-hmm. to be processed, and then turn into what goes into your tanks. And so those prices are very quick to reflect the fear of how much it's going to cost mm-hmm. them in the future, and much slower, and have been historically, mm-hmm. to reflect prices going down. I've seen, who was it tweeting earlier that you retweeted that they, what was the tweet that you shared earlier? It had a really nice way of saying it.
Oh, I don't know. I saw that one too. But look, with oil going down, gas prices are eventually going to go down. But it you know, oil prices they go up really fast and then what is it? They rise like a something and fall like a feather. That's the deal.
Feather. Yeah, it's, right? That's what I'm trying to think of. It's rise like a something, fall like a feather. Somebody's going to say it in the chat.
Yeah. Right.
Anyway, we'll think of it later. All right.
Yeah. So that's the deal with oil prices. All right. Next, Drew, go.
Hi, this is Chase from San Diego, America's finest city. I was balancing the books at the end of the month, and I always get a chuckle out of the pennies of interest that the bank gives out. But I noticed, compared to last month, that the interest rate actually went down. How does this jive with the interest rate hikes that you've been talking about? Thanks. Make me smart.
Yeah, really good question. So the interest rates that we talk about, that most, you know, economic journalists talk about, is a single interest rate. It's called the federal funds rate, and it's the rate for overnight lending at the Federal Reserve. Because that is the interest rate that the Fed controls. It's the rate that they raised today. The range now is 0.25 percentage point to 0.5 percentage point. So a relatively teeny but very symbolic move up in the cost of money. Banks and other depository institutions, whether it's J.P. Morgan down to the corner bank, to the savings and loan, to the credit union, to what have you, they raise and lower their rates independent of what the Fed does every single day. But for their own reasons, right? And it has to do with what rates they get on their deposits. So a penny up or a penny down or whatever the percentage change is doesn't directly correlate to the Federal Reserve's federal fund rates. But the other thing that happens is the larger interest rate level, broad interest rate level on things like car loans, mortgages, home improvement loans, those things, those do rise proportionally, not identically, but proportionally to the federal funds rate. So local rates, much more variable, large, broader rates, much more aligned with what the Fed does. Hope that helps.
Bridget found your tweet from earlier. You were retweeting Captain Rampell, who said they go up like a rocket, down like a feather.
Yes. Yes. That's the brilliant Catherine Rampell. The very brilliant Catherine Rampell. Yeah, for sure. All right.
Okay, so
what else
yeah, so here's a listener who has a slightly different question about the rate hikes this week, and I guess all the ones that are coming in the future.
Hi, this is Kelly from Orlando, Florida. So I have heard that the Fed is going to be increasing rates anywhere from 25 to 50 basis points. But what's up with a basis point? Like, I know that it's secret code for a quarter of a percentage or a half of a percentage, but why don't they just say that? Thanks, guys.
I'm going to leave you to this one. You're all Fed all the time.
All Fed all the time is my life. It's a great, great question. And so here's the deal. So people like Jay Powell and central bankers talk about basis points, and analysts talk about basis points because it comes from the bond market and from traders who are trading instruments that can vary in really tiny degrees of value. Not a neat and tidy quarter of a percentage point or a half a percentage point. You can be talking to a bond trader and he's going to say, you know, this rate's going to change by, you know, 13 basis points, 13 one-hundredths of a percentage point, or 97 basis points, right? 97 one-hundredths of a percentage point. And so that lingo has transferred into the broader context because that's where all the central bankers and people come from, right? They come from that environment. It's either academia and they just get co-opted, or it's like Jay Powell, who comes from private equity and the investment world. And that's how it happened. That's why it's secret code. So just to be clear, a basis point is 1/100th of a percentage point. 25 basis points, which the Fed raised today, is a quarter of a percentage point. And it's just kind of a lingo-y sort of thing. That really is it. That really is it. Truly. It's my whole jam.
Thanks.
Anytime. Anytime. Here's Bonds. Hey, Bonds, come here. Bonds. There she is. There she is. All right. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
Right. So we have another question coming to us in response to our deep dive last Tuesday on the Russia-Ukraine information war.
Hi, this is Dominic calling from Honolulu, Hawaii. And I'm wondering, how much can we trust the images and videos being shared on social media coming out of Ukraine? Things like Russian soldiers supposedly captured and calling their mom on a cell phone. How much can we trust this of the information war? Thanks.
I mean, look, just default to super skeptical is my MO on this. Anything you see, and definitely before you share it, just check it, and check it again. And the easiest way to make sure what you're sharing is true is to kind of rely on a news organization that you know very carefully vets these things. There was an interesting story in the Washington Post, I guess it was like last week, about the team of forensic analysts they have verifying photos and making sure that they can trace it back to where it says it came from and what time it says the image was taken. And you kind of do need a big news organization with a lot of resources to do that. And so check where it's coming from. Make sure that the tweet or the post or the image that you're seeing that is shared from that news organization was really shared by that news organization.
Yeah.
So check to make sure that the URL is real and that the account is actually, you know, at Marketplace and not, you know, at Marketplace SpongeBob or something like that. Or that the I don't know.
Yeah, don't go to that link. Sorry.
You know, that the, you know, just trust your gut a little bit there. Like, huh, it's really strange that they said President Biden said this really, really outlandish thing. Everything President Biden ever says is recorded, you know, in public. So let me see if there's actually a video of him saying it that's being shared by a reputable news organization so that I know it's not a deep fake. So we're going to have a bunch of resources for this on the show page. But basically, you have to start thinking like a fact checker. And there are several websites. One of them is ukrainefacts.org. that is actually just keeping a running list of all of these debunked images and statements and videos that are getting shared. And so if you're skeptical about something, and certainly before you share it, if you're on the fence, check some of these fact-checking organizations that are doing a lot of work to make sure that, you know, we know what's true and what isn't. But it's hard. It really is. I mean,
it's really tough.
I rarely am resharing or posting images coming out of Ukraine because I'm paranoid about exactly this. I'm kind of leaving it to the people who are way deeper into the story and have more resources at their disposal.
Yeah, look, I totally agree. And here's the other thing, right? If it confirms all your priors, right, if it confirms what you already believe, just take a second and really think it through. And also, if it turns out you've shared something and it turns out to be wrong, own it, right? Delete the tweet, delete the post, and say why you're doing it. You know?
Yeah.
Honestly. Honestly.
Yeah. And some people, when they delete a tweet, they maybe do a screenshot of it.
Screenshot,
so people
right.
know
right,
what
right,
you're
right.
talking about, but right. you don't want to
sharing the content again. Yeah.
Yeah, or if you find out that something is not true, don't retweet or reshare that content to debunk it. Screenshot it and then share your fact check if you happen to find a resource that says it's wrong so that you're not perpetuating that misinformation.
You know what? We should do a Tuesday segment on this.
Okay.
You know? I think we should. I mean, we should, you know, get more coherent thoughts other than you and me just, you know, thinking it through. But
I mean, my thoughts are very organized on this because when I was teaching a class, I actually did like a whole class on this.
Yeah. I don't know. We should talk about it. Bridget, make a note. But so here's the thing about that kind of factual journalism. And this is going to sound like a, you know, sort of a cringy pivot, but it's actually true, right? There is so much uncertainty, so much chaos, so much bad information out there that what we do, we believe, has value. And we hope you do, too. So this is the time of year when we're coming to you and saying, look, if you can, we'd love some support. Marketplace.org/givesmart. We have all kinds of swag and all the rest of that jazz, or you could just contribute. And look, we know you all do because you have in the past, and you know what this service that we provide, both here on this podcast and on Tech and on Marketplace and on the morning show, what value they have. And there are times of the year we have to ask for help, and this is one of them.
And, you know, Kai and I and Bridget and Marissa and everybody else on the team, we spend so much time trying to make sure that we collect and gather information and fact check it ourselves to help make you smart. And it does take work and it does take resources. And so if you can help out, we'd really appreciate it. And, you know, Kai was talking about the swag and all the things, but one of them we have right now, if you're able to give $5 a month, you can get one of our most popular thank you gifts at the moment, which is, this cracks me up.
Killing me.
It's
killing
a set
me.
Of Marketplace pens with the tagline, with a bunch of different taglines, including one that says, well, actually, you should say it, Kai.
I am not doing it. It's not a toy. It's not a party game. It's not a party game.
Well, I'm going to do it. It says,
go ahead.
From American Public Media, this is a pen.
Killing me. It's killing me.
Anyway, like Kai said, marketplace.org/givesmart. I'm sorry, Kai. No, I'm not.
That's
not
all right. I know.
Okay. That's it for us today. And that's my daily dose of torturing Kai. Thank you for listening. We will be back tomorrow.
That's a segment too. Daily dose of torturing Kai.
For a hollowed out shell of a Thursday.
Please do though. Send us your questions for What Do You Want to Know Wednesday. You can email us, makemesmart@marketplace.org. You all know that already. Or leave us a voicemail, 508-UBSMART. We'll get it on the pod. We'd love to hear from you. My goodness. This podcast, Make Me Smart, is produced by Marissa Cabrera and Mark A. Green, with, of course, production help from our intern, Tiffany Bowie.
Today's show was engineered by Drew Jostad, Ben Tolliday, and Daniel Ramirez, composed this wonderful theme music, and our senior producer is Bridget Bodner. guy. I really do bully you sometimes.
That's all right. It's all good. I get it. I get it. I'm fine.
You're so long-suffering.